Hello, welcome to MotoGPOD, the podcast about motorcycle road racing. I'm your host, Bob Hayes, and today is Friday, October 14th, 2005. This, by the way, is MotoGPOD's 25th episode. Yay! 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 Cheers! So, to celebrate, we're going to have our little Phillip Island Australian GP preview, which we would have had in any case, but it's kind of a celebration now because it's the 25th episode. As well as the Phillip Island preview, I've got a few other topics to cover, including some reader email, a few comments about Pedrosa, moving to the Repsol Honda team, and some other good news that I found searching around on the internet. First of all, I'd like to say a big, giant thank you to Eric Sandin of Boulder, Colorado, for his generous donation to MotoGPOD. Appreciate that. It'll help pay the internet bandwidth bill, and with all the downloads that we've been getting lately, it's going to start being an issue soon. So thanks again, Eric. Cool stuff. Appreciate it. Eric also passed on a tip that I'd seen floating around about the Pikes Peak International Raceway, where AMA races were racing every year, and Eric Bostrom won a lot of races. And Pikes Peak International is being sold to the International Speedway Corporation, which is a pet corporation mostly or maybe entirely, I don't know, owned by the France family of NASCAR fame. ISC plans to close PPIR, so no more AMA races in Colorado, at least for a little while. That's unfortunate. On the bright side of all that, though, at least on the bright side to that, Salt Lake City, Utah, which isn't really close in miles, but it's close in being the next state over, sort of, is getting a new road racing circuit that looks really great. It looks awesome on their website. Miller Motorsports Park, and it'll be the longest road course in the United States, a little over 4 miles long. They've already announced AMA races for June 2006. Cool stuff. It's a kind of a neat thing, and their website is MillerMotorsportsPark.com if you want to check it out. I also got a couple of items of feedback about the whole team orders thing that I talked about last episode, which, if you'll remember, there was an incident in Qatar for the 125 race with the KTM riders that caused kind of a ruckus, and I didn't think it was handled very well at all by the team. And listener Rob Hay of Wilmington, North Carolina, sent me an email in which he said this, which it's in response to my sort of opinion about team orders in general. And Rob says, one, just got an iPod Nano today, and MotoGPOD was the first podcast I downloaded. And two, by definition, team orders, with quotes, indicates that you are working for something larger than yourself. How can you take a paycheck and say you are part of the team if you're not willing to do what is in the team's best interest? Yes, you may be faster this race, but if you were as fast or faster all season, you would have had as many or more points than me. So step aside, Sonny, and let us win the championship. And, well, Rob, thank you very much for making MotoGPOD the first podcast on your new Nano. That's cool. And as far as the other comment, I mostly agree. I don't like team orders. I don't, but I think they're just part of life, and life isn't fair, and whoever said it was must have been lying, because it's not. Alert MotoGPOD listener Tarun Shom sent me a question in an email about Honda's decision to bring the 250cc rider Danny Pedrosa to the Repsol Honda team for 2006. Tarun writes, why are Honda insisting on putting Danny Pedrosa in the works team? This is a surefire way of handing the title to Rossi again in 2006. Don't get me wrong, I'm a huge fan of Pedrosa, and I'm confident that he will be a world-class MotoGP rider, but not in his first year. Even Valle didn't get a full-on works ride in 2000. He was in a satellite team with his own personal sponsors. Admittedly, he did start to have work support thrown at him when he started to prove himself, but initially the Repsol guys were the focus for that year. Everybody is talking about 2006 being a learning year for Pedrosa, with a view to winning in 2007 on the smaller capacity machines. In which case, it really wouldn't have been made sense to put him in the Gresini team to learn the ropes, then move him to the Repsol team in 2007. Melandri could then have ridden for the works team in 06. In my opinion, Melandri seems to be the only current rider out there who is capable of taking the fight to Rossi. He had a steep learning curve going straight onto the Yamaha last year, but he has really gelled with the Honda this year. He would be a huge threat on the Repsol RCV. Not only does this arrangement give Honda a fighting chance, but it would also have retained the Movistar Telefonica sponsorship for Fausto's team. Am I missing something here? Because it seems pretty obvious to me. Okay, thank you very much for that, Tarun. And first of all, I'm sure that HRC manager Carlo Fiorani and HRC president Suguru Kanazawa know a lot of stuff about this whole situation that I don't know and that I haven't seen. So all of this is just idle speculation and rumor mongering on my part. But that's always fun, and that's mostly what we do here at MotoGPOD, so here goes. I'd say that there's a lot of possibilities for Honda's thinking, a whole lot of stuff, including, of course, just a plain bad decision, although I kind of doubt that. But what I think the short version might boil down to is that maybe Honda isn't even really planning on having a whole big shot at the title in 2006, and they're just hoping to rebuild the team for 2007 when the new 800cc rules come into effect, and more importantly, when Rossi will supposedly be gone from MotoGP and on his way to Formula One stardom or whatever. That idea does sound a little defeatist and not very Honda-like, but maybe Honda is just as intimidated by Rossi as so many of the riders tend to be. On the other hand, if that is the truth, Honda, as in HRC, feels intimidated by the doctor, then they should have brought Melandri up, because like you say, he's one of the few that doesn't seem to be spooked by Rossi, and I think he is one of the only riders that can take the battle to Rossi. It has been widely reported that Honda's decision to put Pedrosa on the Repsol Honda instead of the Telefonica Movistar Honda is the reason that Telefonica is pulling the plug on MotoGP after this season, and of course taking their money to Formula One. But is that really the reason? Telefonica had hoped to become the title sponsor of the HRC team, but Repsol retained all that. And don't forget that Repsol is also a Spanish company, and they probably wanted Spanish riders just as much as Telefonica did. So HRC was faced with a difficult choice. I'm wondering if Telefonica perhaps decided earlier on that they needed to move to Formula One, and once it started looking like Alonso was going to be winning the Formula One championship, it's like, let's start putting our eggs in that basket, because Formula One is huge in Spain right now. I had asked, and I was hoping to get some input from Spanish listeners about just the sort of general feeling of MotoGP versus Formula One in Spain right now, because it used to always be that MotoGP was king in Spain. You know, Formula One, you know, it's cool, but MotoGP is the way to go. And I think that is somewhat changing now that they've got Fernando Alonso as world champion. They've got a serious rider out there, the very first Spanish world champion, the first Spanish-speaking world champion since, like, Fangio in the 50s. So, you know, this is big stuff. And although I didn't hear from any Spanish listeners, which I was a little disappointed about, I did hear about the ratings in Spain for the Brazil Formula One race a few weeks ago, which, you know, I'm not trying to turn this into a Formula One show, but they had a 62% television share of the ratings. That's huge. That's bigger numbers than any show has seen in America in, well, probably since like the 1980s or something, before cable TV really took a big grip on everything and fragmented the market up. I mean, that's like, you know, the numbers that I Love Lucy would have got when you had two choices. I mean, that's amazing, 62% share. So I'm thinking Telefonica used it as an excuse as much of anything. And also, I have read that Pedrosa made the decision himself that he wanted to go to Repsol Honda rather than stay with Gresini Racing and move up with the Telefonica sponsors. And maybe Honda didn't want to move Melandri at all in doing this sort of a switch for other reasons. Gresini already is running a great team. They get great results. They're treated by Honda as virtually a second factory effort. So maybe the decision to leave Melandri there is good for that team, for Gresini. Why mess up a good thing? And plus, I'm not sure what kind of contract Melandri and Gresini have, but perhaps Honda couldn't bring Melandri up if Gresini didn't want to release him. And I mean, I kind of doubt that theory, because I think that HRC, Honda Racing Corporation, gets what HRC wants, and Gresini is rumored to possibly get title sponsorship for Fortuna now because of this whole Rossi mess. You know, who knows? It's a mess. And another rider that a whole lot of us bench racers on the internet, is that we bench racers, whatever, is that we've been predicting poor results for Pedrosa in MotoGP, particularly in his first year, mostly due to the fact that this guy weighs like 100 pounds, almost next to nothing, which leads a lot of people to speculate that he'll have an inability to sort of wrestle that machine around the track. And like you say, everyone's first year is a building year. Granted, I'll give you that. But on his test ride at Valencia at the end of the 2004 season, his very first time on that big four-stroke RC211V, Pedrosa put in lap times that would have had him finishing 17th in that race that had only happened the previous day, the 2004 Valencia race. And sure, 17th ain't that great, but on his first day out on any kind of four-stroke on the track, that's not too shabby. So Pedrosa might be able to pull off a pretty spectacular MotoGP rookie season in 2006, and maybe Honda is hoping to get the manufacturer's title back, even if they have given up on the rider's title. That's, I don't know, possibility. So if the end result that Honda wants for 2007 is a factory team that has a good, comfortable situation with two young riders like Hayden and Pedrosa, riders that have a lot of marketing power and a lot of charisma, by the way, at least in Nicky Hayden's case, he has charisma. Although I'm sure that Pedrosa is going to get a lot more comfortable in interviews and so forth and become less robotic. But to get that result, it might be the best decision, to not shuffle Melandri and Pedrosa around and to do exactly what Honda did, which is Hayden and Pedrosa. So, like I said, all this is just speculation, but in the long run, I think that Honda really made the right choice. And they pleased Repsol. They're going to keep Hayden for at least another year, and they're going to start planning for this post-Rossi era and rebuild. All right, since we're already on the topic of idle rumor and speculation, here's an item that showed up recently on the internet, and it's a story that was originally posted on a couple of Italian websites. The story sort of opens up yet another rumor about Valentino Rossi, this one that he might be racing in both MotoGP and World Superbike in 2006, if you can believe it. So don't hold your breath for that. But what started it all was a slightly different rumor that Rossi might compete in both MotoGP and the 250 classes this next year, which had been circulating quite a while ago. And then Yamaha technical director Masao Furusawa is quoted as saying that Yamaha would never make a new 250cc motorcycle because they're two strokes, and that's just not the way of the future, not environmentally responsible, etc., etc. He went on to say that Yamaha could have Rossi race in MotoGP and in World Superbike in order to offer him, Rossi, something different and something challenging. And like I said, don't hold your breath on that one, but it sure would be a lot of fun to see, wouldn't it? There would be a few conflicting weekends on the calendar, so either Rossi would, need a time machine or maybe a Star Trek kind of transporter on those weekends, or he'd have to miss one or the other. He doesn't like flying, so he might not want to go to the flyaways, but I'm pretty sure that he would choose to miss the Superbike rounds. But I don't think we're going to see it in any case. And in other Superbike news, although this is the British Superbike Series, not World Superbike, but in the British Superbike Series, Gregorio Labia clinched the Bennett's British Superbike Championship riding for Airwaves Ducati with a victory, followed by a second place in Race 2 in the final round at Brands Hatch. Labia had started the season without a contract, called in for Airwaves Ducati's injured rider James Hayden in the opening two rounds, but after a string of fine displays, he earned the ride for the rest of the season while Hayden ended up having to go get a ride with the Rizla Suzuki team. Labia matured and his challenge to the dominant HM Plant Honda team developed and then intensified in the second half of the season, in which he enjoyed a run of 6 victories and 5 second places in 11 races. Even though Gregorio had not ridden competitively for some time, and he didn't know many of the tracks, he succeeded in winning the title against all odds, in spite of Honda throwing full factory support to the HM Plant Honda team, which is a team that has 2 experienced British Superbike riders with Ryuichi Kiyonari and Michael Rutter. Plus, HM Plant Honda also had strong Michelin backing, so that was a very significant achievement for Livia and Airways Ducati, and good job to both of them. That's awesome. And the British Superbike Series is supposed to be very good racing for those of us that don't get it, which we don't over here in the United States, unfortunately. Maybe one day they'll get a website going on like MotoGP.com, pay your $25 or $30 a year or whatever and get to watch races on the internet. I'd probably do that. Okay, it's time for round 15 of the 2005 MotoGP season, and this time we're at Phillip Island in Australia. Phillip Island is a very popular circuit with fans and riders alike. It's a beautiful 4.45 kilometer track by the ocean with breathtaking scenery all around, but more importantly for race fan, it's a real rider's track with fast swooping corners and several good overtaking opportunities, and it's a spectacular track. It's definitely one of the tracks on the MotoGP calendar where the riders can easily, really unleash the power of their machines. And at 177 kilometers per hour, the average speed here is the second fastest of the year. It's second only to Assen on average speed for the whole for the circuit. It's about 110 miles an hour, by the way. But don't think that this means that top speed is the key, because it's not. As usual, actually, at most tracks, the key is not top speed, but it's your average speed, and it's carrying speed into the turns and maintaining momentum from one to the next at Phillip Island that's going to win a race. As far as bike setup is concerned, the track offers a variety of cambers, both positive and negative, so the rear suspension unit will need to be set just right. It will need to offer enough feedback and predictability without pumping through its stroke as the rider tries to drive hard off of the side of the tire, or squatting as the weight transfers from onto the rear. Squatting will unload the front of the motorcycle, which causing it to understeer and push wide, killing the corner exit speed and eventually the lap times. On the other hand, too stiff of a rear shock will lead to the front wheel rising while the rider powers off of each of the slow and medium speed turns, and it will also lead to a fast deterioration of the rear tire and increase the likelihood of a high side crash. The rear shock will use a slightly soft spring rate to aid feel, with a reasonable amount of preload to prevent rear end squat. As for the damping, it will be set up to help balance out the package over some of the finer bumps that are located in some of the high-speed corners. The front forks will mimic the rear setup to ensure an overall balanced geometry. Too hard, and the front will become vague in its feedback, and at these high speeds and lean angles, this can be a very bad thing. Too soft, and the basic feel will be sloppy, not giving the rider the confidence that he needs to carry the high speeds through the corners that, as we said, are the key here. Engines will probably be mapped to reach a high top-end performance, but not at the expense of linear delivery. You want nice, smooth power delivery. Acceleration off the side edge of the tire is the key to a fast lap time, especially exiting the final fast turn where momentum can make the difference between winning and losing. As usual, special thanks to Yamaha Racing for that setup info. That's always super interesting stuff. And there's a little bit more, this time from Nikki Hayden, talking about tires. Nikki said, Phillip Island is definitely more of a back tire track than a front tire track. It just doesn't seem to be as abrasive on front tires. There's not a lot of corners that you really trail brake down into. You're on the rear tire a lot more. There's a lot of spin. It's definitely a dual compound track. You need real hard rubber on the left of the rear, about as hard as anywhere we go. On the front, I'd say it's just about standard. And Nikki's kind of sliding the rear sort of style that he has going on, backing it in. Might cause him a few problems in this track, so he's going to have to watch that. And it'll be interesting to see if he's using, you know, a harder compound than the rest of the field or not, if he's going with a hard and they're going with mediums, that sort of thing. And a couple of things the racers do need to look out for at Phillip Island are wind and seagulls. The wind coming in off the ocean can be very strong, which they need to watch for, and it can also be very cold, coming pretty much straight north from Antarctica, but the weather forecast for this weekend is good. Now, seagulls can be a different story. Troy Corser had a collision with one in 1999 while he was riding in the World Superbike winter testing that was taking place in Phillip Island. It hit his hand on the brake lever, which must have hurt a lot. And actually, a few episodes ago, around the Malaysia race, I mentioned a rider hitting a seagull that I'd seen on TV within the last couple of years. That turned out it was Josh Hayes, and I'd forgotten that. Josh Hayes was riding at Brainerd in an AMA Superstock race when he just nailed full-on a seagull, which mostly kind of hit the fairing, I think, but there was, like, seagull bones stuck in the hump in his leathers and everything. It was really gross. But I didn't remember either incident for sure at the time, and thank you very much to the folks that sent in emails and tipped me off for that. And like I said, Phillip Island is a very popular track with the riders. Rossi pretty much owns this track. He's won here for the last 4 years in the top class on Honda and Yamahas, and he clinched last year's title here. Biaggi won in 2000, and he's podiumed two other times the track. Melandri's had problems in the last 2 years in the MotoGP class, once with his eye and once crashing out, but he won in 2002 on a 250. Caparossi has won here on a 125, and he's finished on the podium 4 times in the last 5 years. Hayden took a third place in 2003, his first real, live, legitimate podium. Edwards, while riding in World Superbike, has finished on the podium here at Phillip Island 8 times, including a win in 2001. The list of you know, who likes this track just goes on and on and on, so you can see that a lot of the riders are very capable of doing very well at this track, which does make predicting the race very difficult. And for Phillip Island, and as I record this, it's, you know, free practice. Well, it's probably happened now when the results are up. But I'm not going to report about it tonight, but I haven't seen any of it yet. I'm going to go with a safe bet that Rossi to win it. And after that, I'm a little bit stumped. It's kind of a guesswork here, but I'm going to go with Melandri for second and Hayden third. So we'll see how I do. Like I said, I haven't even seen the free practice results yet, so maybe I should have taken a look at those and adjusted my guesses. All right, that's going to pretty much wrap it up for today's show. Thank you very much for downloading it and listening to it. Look for a race wrap-up episode for the Australian Grand Prix on Monday. It might be a little bit later than usual. I've got a busy weekend going on, and I won't be able to watch the race until late Sunday night. But I'll get these results up as soon as I've watched the race and recorded the podcast. So that'll be here Monday in just a couple of days. And as always, if you'd like to send in comments or suggestions or whatever, the email address is motogpod@motogpod.com. motogpod@motogpod.com. And the website, if you want to take a look around the website and see the photographs from some of the previous shows, that sort of thing, check out the links, which there are no links for this show, but you know, most of the shows I have links, is also motogpod.com. So I will talk to you later on that, and I am now signing off. So thanks very much. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.